Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 49 for February 15th, 2008. Perky Paul. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Windows Weekly, the day after Valentine's edition. That means we're going to be cranky and cynical, ladies and gentlemen. The cranky, cynical Paul Thurrott. He's bitter. Actually, you shouldn't be bitter. You're going to London tomorrow.
Right.
You dog, you. You travel more than anybody I know.
Well, actually, if there were a competition, I believe you travel further than I do.
I might travel. I don't know. I do go to Canada every month.
Certainly travel more than I do, but you also travel to crazy places.
Oh yeah. I'm going, you know where I'm going next? I'm going to Australia. Yeah. I'm really excited about that. I've always wanted to go there. And that is, I think probably the farthest I've ever gone. I've been to Singapore, but this is even farther.
Yeah. That's crazy far. I've been to Israel, which
that's
is
a long
far.
Way. Yeah. Cause that's, I went to Egypt and that's close to Israel. So I know how long that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why London? Yeah, just for fun or for work?
Yeah, this one's just for fun. We're trying, you know, I think we might have actually mentioned this somehow on this Windows podcast that, you know, we've been going to France so much that my kids actually asked me if we could go someplace that speaks English next year.
So, oh, that's the fun thing about England. After traveling and struggling with the language, all of a sudden they kind of speak the same language.
Well, that's the joke's on them because we're going to go to London and then this summer we're going to Ireland. And of course, both of these places speak English, but not really.
You know, they don't speak. They speak the King's English. So not.
I'm
not
expecting, I guess, confused looks from my kids, but I'm gonna let that happen on its own, and they can enjoy that.
This will be fun. So, but we'll manage. You'll be back in time to do the show next week. So,
yeah. Yep.
We'll get it. We will not miss a show, and I'm working on it. I figured out a way to do this from Canada, so we may actually get.
They finally got internet access in Canada.
Yeah, it's amazing, eh? You can get online, eh? They've got internet access. You can order your moose online.
It's not one of those Nintendo things on the TV.
I hate that in hotels when they say internet access on the hotel, and it turns out it's
false advertising.
It's like a web TV.
Yeah. Oh, that's not seriously it. With a Nintendo hand controller.
Yeah.
It's awful. What is that? Why would anyone want this?
I think it's a hangover from like 1987. I don't know where they got
somebody
it.
Signed some huge deal and didn't realize
exactly.
They were getting
exactly. So let us talk about the world of Windows. Vista SP1 is closer than we thought.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, for some of us. Anyway, if you have an MSDN subscription, you know, a paid subscription or a TechNet Plus subscription.
I picked a lousy day to let my MSDN subscription lapse. I can tell you that.
I did too, actually. I think I'd remember this. Mine expires every December.
Yeah, we have this conversation every year.
Yeah, every year we've probably done this. So I always forget about it. And then invariably January comes around and I have to go download something and I get the error message. And I find that to be very irritating. So it takes a couple of weeks, you know, for it to come back to life, but it is back to life. So I have it now.
For those who don't know, it's Microsoft Developers Network. What is it? What's the point of being a member of that?
Well, it's ostensibly the point is you're a developer and what you need is access to Microsoft's platforms, you know, Windows, Office, the server stuff and all, and some applications. And the reason you need access to that is because you're going to write applications or solutions that run on top of those things. So
right.
They aren't technically licensed to be used in business. They're for you to work on. But, you know, I think there's a significant percentage of people who sign up for these things, which can cost, you know, about $1,000 a year or more.
Well, they're varying levels, right? It can cost more or less.
I'd have to look it up, but I know there's an OS version where you just get the operating system.
That's what I got last year because all I wanted was Vista.
Yeah, and that one is probably $1,000 or less.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I was gonna say less than $1,000. Yeah. So it's in that ballpark. So what you get is what you would have now is access to, you know, Vista Service Pack 1 you know, any of the versions of XP, Windows Server 2008, things like that. So,
but then there's like the big MSDN where you get everything that Microsoft does.
Well, it actually, see, it isn't everything that they do, but it's a lot of it. Yeah, it's a lot of it.
It's like that's the premium super gold extra heavy duty.
Yeah, I know it's so unlike Microsoft to make different versions and charge, you know, different amounts of money for that.
I think they should stop doing that.
They should do more of it. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just curious. What do you, you know, here I am, you know, buying a Mac operating system, and there's one SKU. And Steve Jobs always makes fun of Microsoft. And then I look at Vista, and there's like seven or eight SKUs of Vista.
Yep. All right. So I'd make two comments to that. As a consumer, obviously, the one SKU is the way to go. And I obviously would point to the Apple's way of doing things and saying this is the superior way to do it. But on the flip side, I would also point out that when you pretty much own the market, that's when you do stuff like what Microsoft's doing. And when you're trying to get in, make an inroad into the market like Apple is, that's when you do what they do. So
it's a profit deal?
Well, when you are the dominant player in the market, how do you get new customers and make more money?
Okay.
You sell.
You have a cheap version. You upsell. Okay.
You introduce business class, first class.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Right. And actually, in Microsoft's defense, unlike Apple, Microsoft really does have two very different markets, a home market and a business market. So it makes sense to have a home and a business version of Vista.
So it makes sense to have eight different versions, yeah.
And the basic, you know, the thing that gripes me, and I know we've talked about this, is Vista Basic, is like nobody should even order that. You shouldn't get that because it's so useless.
Vista Basic is the one where I have to imagine they're surprised when anyone even orders it.
Comes on cheap.
Do we actually make this thing?
The sad thing is, you know who ends up with Vista Basic is the neophytes, the novices, the people who are least able to figure out what the hell happened to them.
Right.
Because they get the cheap PCs. I often say this on the radio show is, you know, if you're a newbie, you shouldn't really be buying the cheapest PC you can find. But that's, of course, what they do.
Right. Right. So, well, people tend to use what they get, you know, with a PC or whatever. Right. And actually, this plays into a conversation we'll be having later in the show about Firefox.
Okay.
Interestingly,
okay.
If I could do my own segue. But sticking people with that low end experience is kind of lousy.
Yeah.
I think because they don't really understand, you know, that there's better stuff available.
So the same thing happens with MSDN. I bought the cheapest MSDN I could get.
Well, no, but you did that for a specific reason.
All I needed was Vista. It was an expensive way to buy Vista.
The Chinese version of Visual Studio 2008 or whatever. So
I actually love Visual Studio, but I always fantasize that I'm going to do more programming than I do.
I don't want to say I fantasize. That's a slightly strong word, but I often do think of how things could have been, you know, because I started out in this industry programming and eventually got into the web stuff instead. And then now I just talk about it and write about it and I don't actually do any of it. But I do use the Visual Web Developer product, which is the free version of Visual Studio aimed at web development to do the super site.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, I think the reason I use it is because at its base, at the core of it, it is a really impressive text editor, you know, for that kind of thing. No, it really is. I mean, I know that sounds stupid, but
you use it as a text editor.
It does all the, you know, the code completion stuff.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
It's
so it's
good
not like
that.
Front page.
No, it's not.
And that's all we'll
good,
say
good,
about
good
that.
And bad. Yeah, good. take from that what you will.
So MSDN, let's say there's the basic MSDN operating system. That's what I bought. That's $700. The Visual Studio Professional with MSDN Professional is $1,200. The Visual Studio Professional with MSDN Premium is $2,500. The Visual Studio Team System 2008 Database Edition with MSDN Premium is $5,469. It goes on. There's more.
Wow. You can call an ultimate.
There is. Well, the premium, the top of the line premium. Mm-hmm. Visual Studio Team System 2008 Team Suite with MSDN Premium.
$20,000.
It's $10,939. But
really?
you buy that if you're, you know, a big Windows developer.
Right. You're a company with a team of programmers.
And that's worth it for you.
I would imagine it is, yeah.
Because, I mean, you get like 10, when you get the operating system version, you get like 10 licenses. It was, in a way, worth it for me to spend $700 because I installed I was able to install Vista.
You can install Vista several times. Yeah. Although, you know, one thing I ran into, I think we talked about this earlier, was in the past year, you know, Vista's been out for a year. So, of course, I reinstall systems all the time.
Right.
And I actually ran into product key problems because I hit the, you know, the limit that you can do. Vista, unlike XP, is not available in a very simple, you know, volume license version that can just roll over again and again and again.
Right.
And
but you just create a new key, though, right?
Yeah, they kind of slipped me a couple of keys, but to get me by. But then when my subscription was renewed, you get a new set of keys for the next year. So I'm basically going year to year. It's like every year I'm gonna have to hold my hand out and ask, please, sir, might I have some Vista?
Please, sir. Yeah, the only reason I have a lot of installs is I have three or four machines with Vista on it, but then I create a lot of virtual machines.
Yes.
That kind of eats it up.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Moving right along. Anything you want to say about SP1 as long as we were talking about it? It's available. No, have you downloaded it? Are you using it? Do you love it?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm using it. And actually, last weekend, I wiped up my my main PC and reinstalled from scratch, which is a freaking nightmare, by the way. But whatever. You know, it's up and running. It's fine. But the performance gains are actually really interesting. One thing, because I'm traveling, I copy over my website, which does not actually occupy a lot of disk space. I want to say it's something like 1.7 gigabytes, but it's an astronomical number of files because it's all these teeny image files and yes, really small text files. And I this is something I'm going to have to go back and actually test on a Vista, you know, RTM system compared to SP1. But it seems like that type of file copy has gone dramatically faster than it used to, because I remember just leaving the thing there and walking away and going, doing some other things. And, you know, it still takes 10 minutes or whatever, but it really does seem like the file copy stuff is much better.
They said that it would be, that was one of the features. Yeah. Right?
I mean, I actually noticed that I wasn't sitting here thinking I'm going to benchmark this or anything, but I did this copy and I thought, wow, that thing's kind of cranking. That's pretty good.
Yay. Yeah. That's what normally slows it down is lots of small files.
Yeah.
It's not the big file.
Yeah, a couple of big files, no problem.
Yeah.
A bunch of small files. Yeah, that used to be painful. It used to just grind to a halt.
Painful, yeah. So have you been following this has turned it into a soap opera, the Microsoft Yahoo deal, and now Yahoo, first they went to Google. Google kind of, I think Google teased them.
You should have the theme music for, you know, as the world turns or something. Yeah, I mean, you know, I wrote this thing for tomorrow, for Friday, ahead of time, but it basically just amounts to, you know, is everyone else as tired of this as I am? You know,
it's amazing.
It's only been a couple of weeks, but it's like this, it's like the Microsoft antitrust trial compacted down. So it's an ongoing soap opera.
So now they've gone to Rupert Murdoch News Corp. It's like kind of like, well, it's a lesser evil. I'm sure they're not happy about it. Right?
Clearly, they're doing everything they can not to sell to Microsoft.
That in a way, it's an insult to Microsoft. We hate you so much, we'd go to News Corp.
Well, but remember, they're not talking about being purchased by News Corp. You know, in other words, I would put it more like, we hate the thought of being bought outright. You know,
right.
The one thing that Microsoft has not left the door open to is the possibility of any other kind of partnership. You know, what they basically said is, we're going to buy you, and that's the end of the story. You know, Microsoft isn't going to, you know, they're not going to accept a counteroffer where Yahoo says, well, what if we, you know, just partner on search or something? You know, it's not going to work that way.
And the shareholders, you know, are not going to let Jerry and company walk away from such a rich deal.
Right.
They want some money. So will they go to News Corp and say, invest a little bit, we'll give some of it to the stockholders, everybody will be happy.
They have to prove that whatever they can do is at least on par.
Right.
With what Microsoft is offering. And I just don't see that happening.
It'd have to come from somebody who hates Microsoft so much they'd be willing.
And is the richest person on earth. and since that person actually works for Microsoft,
it's not gonna,
until June.
It's not going to happen.
Then the second richest person on earth is his best friend.
Right. It's not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, even Warren Buffett, Paul Allen, you go down the list.
Steve Ballmer.
Who are they going to go to? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Larry Ellison. He must still have some.
He hates him. Yeah, he hates him. Maybe Larry will go. You know, if I'm Jerry Yang, I go to Larry Ellison right now.
There's no synergy there at all, which is what makes it perfect for Larry Ellison. Because it's like, let me get this straight. This has nothing to do with my core business, but I screw Microsoft.
Yay.
Okay. I could work that.
Yeah, we could call it Yorahu.
Yeah. Anti-Microsoft.
Yorahu. And that concludes this edition of the Microsoft Soap Opera. Join us next week as Yahoo goes to Larry Ellison and says, please take me. And now back to our show. How do you like it? I found some. A little soap opera music.
Jeez.
Yeah, the internet. What an invention.
I keep waiting for Vincent Price to laugh in the background.
No, that was more like soap opera music than I have scary music. That's different.
Okay.
That's different than soap opera music.
Well, that music is scary to me, but maybe...
It's kind of the old, so it's not the Days of Our Lives. I should get the Days of Our Lives theme. Like sands through the hourglass of time. Ding, ding, right. Ding, ding. Somebody should do that. Put it on YouTube. They probably do well.
Yeah.
Especially now that you can download YouTube right onto that Apple TV. Have you upgraded your Apple TV?
Yes, sir, I have.
And are you happy?
I'm really happy, actually.
I am, too.
I wrote sort of a scathing blog post about sort of a semi-related topic, mostly about closed captioning and how lousy the support is. But to get off of that, which is sort of a side issue, I have to say, I actually use Apple TV and have been using Apple TV, for the past year.
It's the two of us, you and me, that we're the ones.
I think we are the two guys. Yeah. So, but this update, it actually significantly improves the experience such that this sounds like the smallest thing, but the fact that I can now access my iTunes, movies, music, photos, streaming, even though it's syncing, is actually a huge deal because that wasn't possible before.
Yeah.
And what that basically means is I can hit any of the content that's on my PC, and it makes it more like the Xbox 360 in that sense, but quiet and a much nicer user interface. And I really like that. But then, of course, the big stuff, I guess to the outside world, i.e. the people who aren't me, the big deal, obviously, is the movie rental stuff. And, I downloaded a few HD movies. I downloaded a TV show just to kind of test it. Actually, I downloaded William Shatner. It's worse.
T.J.
Hooker. If you want a little bit of a slice of the 1980s, I'm talking like Adrian Zemed. I think that's his name.
Yeah,
right?
Adrian Zemed. Yeah,
it's insane.
There's nothing older than an old TV show.
Oh, this is crazy. This is like William Shatner as grizzled cop. It's crazy. Anyway, so I spent a night sort of looking at HD movies, and my wife and I had just wide-eyed astonishment at T.J. Hooker, but I like it a lot. I think they've done some good stuff there. A couple of little nitpicks. They're pushing content on the Apple Store ahead of your own stuff. But, as sort of mercenary as that is, I think it also reflects the way people will actually use it. And I think the way it is now, it's far more valuable than it was before. I think you can make a good case before for saying, look, there really is a small audience that really needs this kind of thing. Whereas today, I think it's a much bigger audience. I think they've opened it up to a much wider group of people.
The first day I got it, mm-hmm. It was great. I put together a whole evening of entertainment. I picked a podcast, a video podcast. That's like a short subject. It was a 5-minuter. I picked a short show that my wife likes to watch, this HBO psychiatric, because she's a psychotherapist. Why somebody who's a psychotherapist will want to come home and watch a TV show about a psychotherapy session is beyond me.
Wife is a psychotherapist?
You didn't know that?
No, so I'm just curious, because she is married to you. What does she have to say about you?
I figured I'd get free treatment. let me put it this way. This morning I said, I don't have to be until this afternoon to tape Paul Theron. I think I'm going to stay in bed. She said, no, you're not. I want the house to myself. You're out of here. So I downloaded a short subject. I downloaded, in treatments like 27 minutes. Actually, I think that was on the other system, but I was able to stream it. And then I got Altered States, an HD movie. I wouldn't talk about 80s. Talk about a period piece.
Yeah.
William Hurt's first movie. But and by the way, now I know some of the HD prints are not very good. Dr. Zhivago, Merlin tells me, is really scratchy. Yeah,
well, you know, it depends. A lot of these things are obviously, you know, they're
filmed.
Where
they get it, yeah.
And they're kind of spotty quality because the film was spotty quality.
But I have to say, Altered States looked great. And it filled the screen. I was really happy, yeah.
Sure.
It was a great evening of entertainment. And it came all of it, you know, none of it came from the cable.
Right. No, I like it. I mean, I plugged in the Ethernet. I usually have it on wireless, but I figured
for speed.
And it was fine. I mean, you could bump into that thing where it was downloading, and you could hit the point where, you know, the download wasn't done yet. You know, if you skipped ahead, obviously. But you know, most people, you're just going to watch the movie, so there's no big issue. And I do like the way it syncs back to the computer. So the TV show, for example, actually synced back to the iTunes on my PC. Although, of course, the HD content won't, for whatever reason. And I don't know why they're afraid of people. Well, of course, they're only available for rental. That would probably be why, I guess.
Yeah. Although I'm sure at some point they'll have...
I would think so.
Purchasable content. You know, that's up to the movie studios, not up to Apple.
The other thing I'd like to see someone explain, and maybe you know the answer to this, is with the initial version of this, it supported up to 1080i. Although I'm not really sure what the resolution of the videos you download are at, because it doesn't really say on the Apple TV. So now it says it supports 1080p, and I can't imagine that they added support for 1080p via a software upgrade. No. So I'm guessing that what we're looking at is in other words, it can output it. I mean, or it can send a 1080p signal, but it can't be sending 1920 by 1080. It must be a lower resolution. I don't know.
I don't know either. I only have a 1080i set, so I don't have that option anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it looks good.
Looks great. I mean, the Altered States would... I think it was better than DVD quality, maybe a little bit less than HD, DVD, or Blu-ray, but not to notice. I mean, certainly
I think it depends on the film. So one of the movies I downloaded was an 80s movie as well, The Presidio, which is that Sean Connery movie. And it's an okay movie, and it was a little grainy, and there were those kind of white specks here and there. You know, you could, the film quality stuff would shine through, but I can't, unless they completely remastered it.
Right.
I think if you had this on Blu-ray, it would look very similar.
Right.
I thought the quality was great.
I downloaded faster than I thought, too. I expected a day download, and it was just a couple of hours.
Yeah, the only thing that's odd about it is if you're downloading and watching, it won't do any other downloads.
Ah.
You know, so I actually queued up a bunch of movies, and I was really surprised when I finished watching the first movie, I went back and looked at the downloads, and the next movie had not even started. It was literally waiting for me to stop doing stuff. Yeah.
Xbox. Xbox will do that.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd have to think the hardware inside an Apple TV is pretty low-end, comparatively speaking, so... That's completely understandable. It's okay. It's fine.
One of the other things I liked is that the photo album capability now supports .Mac and Flickr. So I could put, although I was never able to get my Flickr library working.
Well, okay. So I wanted to ask you about that as well. So I can hit my public Flickr stuff.
Ah.
But I didn't see a way to get at the private stuff.
No, you wouldn't be able to because you can't sign in. Yeah.
Right. And that's what they need because my private stuff is the stuff I would want to put on the TV.
Me too. Yeah, you can get anybody's public. I could put Paul Theroux's pictures on my TV.
Exactly, and I can too, but it's the stuff I used to sell off my website or, you know, whatever silly looking
stuff.
No,
you want pictures of your kids and stuff, the stuff that you don't normally let others see.
That's the stuff that's not on the public version. Yeah. So I have to sort of figure that out. I because of the way I do my private website, I do actually have a public version of my family photos, you know, lower quality, but they're on Picasa, and I'm doing so many different photo things lately. I can't remember. I don't believe that Apple TV has a Picasa interface. It's only
not
Flickr,
yet.
Isn't it?
Although Flickr and .Mac. Although Google says they're making a Picasa for Mac, I would, and because of the YouTube integration already in it, I have a feeling that would be a logical step.
Why would they do that?
Well, it's easier to limit it. I mean, you got to pick some. You can't. I mean, I'm amazed they have Flickr.
No. I mean, why would they make a Picasa for the Mac? You know, they have an iPhoto uploader.
I know. You don't really need it, do you? Except, you know, Picasa is better than iPhoto. Use Picasa to keep track or Adobe Photoshop album? Or what do you use for your photos?
Right. Well, I use a bunch of different things. And unfortunately, you know, I've been testing this stuff lately because I've been working on that series for the Supersite about the digital media core stuff, and I've been going over different photo things. The truth is, for managing photos, I actually just use the file system. And even though it's not as good in Vista as it was in XP in some ways, it's still pretty good. And for just organizing them and then also backing them up and putting them in different locations, I find that the file system is fine. One of the problems with using the applications like Windows Live Photo Gallery or Windows Photo Gallery or Adobe Photoshop Elements has that organizer tool.
Right.
Is that, you know, I install my system so many times, I'd have to keep, you know, going back into those things and changing things around. It's simpler for me just to copy files around
and
it.
And they tend to want to put their own file system, you know, or the organization in.
Yeah.
Right? Is there anybody that would just use your folders as is and say, okay, that's the organizer? I think a Photoshop album will do that, won't it?
They all sort of do it. I mean, Picasa sort of does that. You know, one of the views in Picasa is just the folders.
What do you got?
You know,
right.
Yeah, but the Picasa, Photoshop, all these things, what they really want you to do is go in and tag photos and then view things like that. And that's fine. But, you know, the way that I do things is I have certain photos that, you know, go onto my iPhone. They're the photos that used to sync out to the Apple TV. But now, of course, I can put them all out there more easily.
Right.
I would actually just create a copy and put it in a favorites folder for that purpose, you know. So if we come back from a trip, maybe there are three or four pictures that I think are good enough to go in there, and you just kind of keep that updated. And that, to me, that's simpler. I, you know, there are different ways to do this stuff, but you know, Flickr and Picasa, I think the big deal with those things, of course, is that we're talking about, you know, these online access points, and that's one of the things that I've been looking at. Not so much the end user applications, but the services, you know. And I actually have been using Picasa for a long time, but I've run into some problems because, you know, Picasa is a flat one hierarchy, you know, view. And when you have the hundreds of folders that I do, when I go to the Picasa webpage and log in, it takes 5 minutes for that page to render. I mean, it's humongous. And that's a problem, you know, and I think Flickr does a better job of organizing things. You know, they have collections and sets. And you can organize things as you will. You can make things public and private, of course, like you can on the other. But they just have a nicer, it's more like a file system. And I just think that makes sense. I don't know.
So you're going to go all Picasa?
I don't know. Well, I'm all Picasa now, but I'm thinking I'm going to, I've been playing lately with putting stuff up on Flickr. Flickr, I should also note, is much less expensive. So there are free versions of
Picasa
both.
Picasa charges you for storage?
No, you get a basic amount of storage, but I want to back up all my photos, and that requires me to pay for a serious amount of storage.
Oh,
and
I want to say that. Oh, I thought it was completely free. Okay.
No, so Flickr, I think, is $20 or $24, $25 a year for unlimited storage, which is phenomenal.
I mean,
absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Picasa kind of ties into Google's services-wide storage scheme, and I don't remember the exact pricing, but I want to say I'm probably spending $75 a year and probably getting somewhere around 40 or 45 gigabytes or something like that. It's significantly more expensive.
I use a lesser known site. And I have to say now, I was a little worried about Flickr with Yahoo and Play. So more and more I'm moving away from Flickr. Flickr is the place because that's where everybody is. I mean, for the radio show, we use it, for instance, for our
The big side effect of that, by the way, is everyone supports Flickr.
Right. It's universal.
So, yeah, and you see that with Apple TV comes out, the one thing they support
right away,
other than their own thing, is Flickr.
Right. But I use a service called SmugMug that has so many more features. It's what I use in my blog. It embeds into my blog. So when you're on my blog and you go to the photos section, it looks like you're still in my blog. But it's
I think a friend of mine uses
SmugMug. Now they talk about
cheap. Snapfish is HP. I was thinking it was HP.
Snapfish is something else. This is basically a Flickr service, but it's a more pro Flickr service, and it costs more too. I think it's 60 or 70 bucks a year, but you could store video. You could if you get the high end version.
What are you getting though for 60, 70 bucks a year? Is it unlimited or is it a certain amount?
I believe it's unlimited. Let me, you know what? I should check.
I'll have to look into this. I do have a friend on SmugMug.
I like SmugMug. I've been very happy. You know, it's the McCaskills do it. Don McCaskill did. Now I've forgotten. You know him. He's an entrepreneur. He's been around. Chris, his son. And they do really do a nice job. And it's just not that well known. I wish it were better known. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I can't. Now
I'd like to see. I know SmugMug has, it's more reminiscent of that Apple web album kind of type UI. It's kind of
It's nice. Very flexible. You can do anything you want. It's got themes. I'm pretty impressed. But anyway, that's just my personal.
Yeah, but
impression.
When this year is over, my photos are going to be in 20 different places.
That's the problem. You kind of have to pick one and keep it and stick with it.
I know. Just run with it. Well, I keep praying that Google's going to update their site to just got support folders. If I could just have one folder for each year or something, that would significantly enhance the experience. Right. You know.
Well, you know, another possibility. And by the way, I think the reason we're talking about this, of course, you store all this stuff on your hard drive. But having it on a hard drive without any other backup is scary. By putting these things online, any site that allows you to store high quality versions is a backup.
Right. So on that note, I actually my photos are also backed up to Amazon's S3 service. But
that's I was going to ask about because would be a good choice. Yeah,
that's extremely inexpensive.
Right.
And the only big expense was that there's a nighttime bandwidth limitation. So it actually took, I want to say, 3 or 4 nights for my entire collection to get uploaded.
Well, that's interesting.
But, because it's so cheap, but even that one time upload, I want to say that, for that 1 month, I think the fee just for getting it up there was somewhere like $20 or $30. But then after that, it's just $2 or $4 a month or something. It's very inexpensive. So yeah, my photos are all over the place.
The disadvantage of S3, as cheap as it is unlike Picasa or SmugMug or Flickr, there's no display features. It's just storage.
You need to use an application or service that hits S3 on the back end, and that's what Jungle Disk does.
Right.
I don't know. So anyway, this is something I'm looking into. I mean, I don't have an answer. I wasn't intending to come out and say, look, this is the one you got to get. Although I would like to be able to say something like that. I just don't know. And I think that these things are going to evolve over time. Obviously, the amount of storage will go up on the places that have limits. The prices will go down. And, it's kind of all over the place. But there's a lot out there. So it's kind of interesting. I like Flickr, though. I mean, I was kind of playing around with this stuff the other night. And
I love Flickr. I mean, Flickr is really neat. Although I think people find it harder to use than...
Well, it's quirky.
It's
because
quirky.
You have to get into their terminology. You know, they have collections and sets. And if you don't know what you're talking about, it's unclear what's going on.
I realized how hard it is to use when, I set up a Flickr group for all of us who came back from Egypt. And everybody said, oh, great idea. But nobody was on Flickr. And none of them, these are smart people. They're all Yale and Harvard graduates. None of them could figure out how to get their pictures onto Flickr and then into the group. None of them.
Sure.
So I gave up. I thought,
there's a Flickr upload tool.
No, they could get it uploaded, but then it was, you upload it and now you have to join a group and then you have to say, put my pictures in that group so everybody can see them. And
all right, so
they didn't get it.
I'm going to do the Microsoft thing and then we're going to walk away from this forever. But, you could have used Windows Live Events.
I should have. What's
and
that?
That's all I'm going to say. Who cares?
I would have liked to have found something easier. Now, a lot of them use Macs, so I wasn't going to use something that was specific Mac or PC.
It's like an Evite, with the difference being that everyone who's invited can go back after the fact and post pictures and write things, and it becomes a collective memory for the group.
That's what I needed. Windows Live Events.
Mm-hmm. Oh! Well, by the way, there are storage limitations too, so I'm sure it may not have actually fit your needs, but you can see where that sort of thing could be valuable to people.
And it would have worked fine with a Mac. I should have just done it. I thought I'd be hip and with it and use Flickr, because there's no E,
Right.
Pretty cool. Firefox 3, Firefox 3 is out. Or is almost out. It's beta 3 just came out, and they. I talked to the Firefox people. They said around March or April, we're expecting to release it. I'm liking it. You were very excited about it because it had that Windows Vista native look. Now, not so happy.
They dropped it.
What?
I've had this thing in the back of my head for a while now. On topic with what we've been discussing previously. I reinstall my systems all the time, and when you reinstall your systems all the time, I can't really make these, system images and reuse them again and again, because the truth is I test so much, different software every month, every quarter, every year that what I need on there just changes, So there's no real good way for me to do this. And what I want to do is minimize the amount of time and effort it takes to reinstall. And, Firefox is yet another one, thing I have to install, and then I have to install the add-ons and, you know, the Shockwave and the Flash and all the stuff you have to add to it to make it work the way you want it to work and all that. And and when they dropped this UI idea, it kind of crashed right, you know, right there to me. You know, why am I bothering with this thing? You know, I don't even know anymore. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, for most people who use Windows, you know, there is a perfectly good browser that comes in it. And I have sort of not been using that browser, which is IE7, out of inertia in some ways, because I've been using Firefox for years. I mean, since before it was Firefox, you know. And I don't know anymore, you know. And I think one of the benefits to using Firefox 3, to me, would have been that it was a beautiful Vista application. I want things on my system to look good. And to, you know, to highlight the strengths of the system.
Well, to look native, and, if nothing else.
Yeah. So unfortunately, you know, I think it was back in October, they had come up with some mock-ups of what this could look like. And they were beautiful. Vista-esque, you know, with the, if you look at something like Windows Photo Gallery or even Windows Calendar, and you can see a sort of style of application that I would call Vista native. That's what it was going to look like, and it was beautiful. But apparently what they decided over time was that if they truly made this thing look different in every operating system, if they made a version for Linux, they would make one for Mac OS X, and they would make one for Windows, I guess two for Windows, you know, one for XP and one for Vista, that they would lose a centralized branding theme, you know, that no one would look at that and know that it was Mozilla. They would just look at it and know that it was tied to that operating system. So they've completely backstepped from this plan. And now, but what they've come up with is, it's just so awful. I mean, it's just ugly and terrible. And it's illogical. You know, they've done things like Apple did with Safari. They took the home button out off of the main toolbar. But in Mozilla's case, they put it on the bookmark toolbar. So they moved it off of the navigational toolbar. And it is a navigational button, by the way. And they've put it on the bookmarks toolbar.
Huh.
You know?
That shouldn't...
It's weird. But that
so
doesn't...
So there's,
you know,
no... Because on the Mac, the way they did it is they created an extension that is...
Yep.
An add-on that is the Apple theme called Proto.
Right.
So they didn't do that for Vista, or that's not...
Well,
it's not the
same
thing.
Is a theme. It's just ugly.
It's not the same.
Right
thing.
Now, yeah. Right. So in beta 3, the theme that you get is the one that is going to be for XP. The theme, as it will eventually appear, looks just like this, except that instead of the bright colors, what you're going to see is these sort of gel cap looking things, which I don't think icons like this actually appear anywhere in Vista. I'm not sure where this comes from, but it's really bizarre.
I'll tell you the truth. Firefox, nobody at Mozilla likes Microsoft or Windows. They can't. They're open source guys, right?
Yeah.
So they're not going to make it look good in Vista. Are they?
No, apparently they're not.
But I was surprised when they said it'll have the Vista look.
Yeah. I was so excited. I published pictures of it. It looked beautiful. And it's just terrible. And I feel weird even focusing on something like this. I mean, I'm talking about a browser theme here, right? So, you know, what's the big deal? But God, it's just so awful. It's awful.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I give up. I don't know.
I give up.
So, like I said, last weekend I reinstalled Vista on my main desktop. And I'm basically just using IE7 to see if I can deal with it. Because, like I said, sort of out of inertia, I kept using Firefox. But, you know, I don't know. I don't even know if it's worth it. If the sites that I go to all work correctly in Internet Explorer, why bother?
Right.
You know, and what's the point? I mean, am I making some kind of... Am I trying to make a point here? I mean, am I trying to make a statement or something? I don't know.
You're saying you want to look native. Now, I have to say, I'm sure I'll hear from my friends at Mozilla who say, we love Windows. It's more people use Firefox on Windows than any other operating system. But guys, if you do
like,
call
I can tell you
that,
how I'm going to hear from him, too. And what I'm going to hear is like, oh, this guy Thurrott's a jerk. He's a hater. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's a hater.
He's like, you know, we're busy adhering to web standards and he's complaining about a browser theme. You know, he's an idiot. You know, yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah, okay, but I'm just telling you, I was excited about this, and I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like going from a Jaguar to a Ford Fiesta. It's just, it's not fair.
I like it. There's the headline, from a Jaguar to a Ford Fiesta. When you, I want to loop back to the Flickr thing, and Picasso, does Picasso, do you do... I'm going to ask you, because one of the things I wanted to do, in fact, I wanted to do it for Valentine's Day, too late, but one of the things I want to do is to make a photo book out of my Egypt trip. Do you ever do photo books of your trips?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Who do you use?
And who do you recommend? I used to use, yeah, so this is another thing I've been working on. So I used to use Apple's iPhoto, but obviously that's not available to Windows users.
iPhoto, so that's what I was thinking of using. iPhoto does pretty nice books.
Yes, yeah, iPhoto does a nice job. And obviously it's improved every year as well. Now, yeah. iPhoto, as it turns out, on the back end, uses my publisher.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's not... Yeah, you could get many of the same companies.
Yeah, they're not exactly the same, but very similar quality and so forth. Right. And there's also... there's a bunch of companies that do this. You know, Peekaboo and Blurb and so forth. I think I've... settled on my publisher as the one I like the most, in the sense that they have a lot of good themes with a lot of good, you know, page types and so forth. You right. know, captions are not different, you know, setups with different amounts of photos and so forth. And the quality is great. And you know, this sounds so weird, but, you know, we were in France for so long last year. I actually tried to create a book, a photo book from that vacation, I think 4 or 5 different times in different services, including iPhoto. And what I actually ran into was there's a 100-page limit almost on all of them, except for Blurb, I think. And this was like the only time I ever needed anything close to that.
How big is your book?
It's humongous. Well, I eventually did do it with my publisher. And the way I did it was, knowing that there would be a 100-page limit, I broke the...
Do volumes.
You know, the trip down into sections. And no, I just made sure I did, you know, that I just kind of cut it down until it would fit. Rather than have 2 books or something, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, remember, it's not just a picture per page. So we're not talking 100 pictures here. That could be, I mean, sometimes other pages have 3 pictures on them. And I don't know if my publisher does double-sided pages or not, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're talking hundreds of photos here.
Oh, yeah. And I did and that particular one, I did a huge book. I usually, the standard size is something like, I want to say 11 by 14, somewhere on there. It's kind of a standard photo book size. But for that book, I did the bigger one, hardcover. It's humongous. It's really neat. I had a friend and I went to Washington, D.C. last year. He used Blurb to make a hardcover book, also that large size, a phenomenal, absolutely beautiful looking. But I've made 4 or 5 in the past few months.
Do you go directly to my publisher, or do you do it through?
Well, they have no. I don't like the thought of doing that because it's too much work.
Have their own application.
Yeah, yeah. So they use something called, I think it's called Bookmaker. Download it to the PC.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like a poor man's iPhoto in that sense, you know. Right. But it works well enough. All of these applications, including iPhoto, have their weird little quirks. You know, you drag a photo in and it changes the layout.
Right.
Drives me crazy. That's it's almost like you have to drag them into the, you know, the spaces in particular order, or it will rearrange them.
Right.
For whatever reason, and you know,
it's trying to do too much because they want to.
It's trying to be too smart. Yeah. But I've done some interesting things with the books, you know, and I've tried to do them in different ways. There were trips we took last year I never made books for, so I went back and did those again. You know, we went to Rome last year and made a regular size book about that. But we were in Paris for a long weekend in January, and I decided, and this is something I've been meaning to do for a long time. You know, we always bring a camera, and you were like tourists, and you walk around and take pictures. And I said, you know, I'm not going to bring my camera this time. We're just going to go and have a good time. But I will have my iPhone. So I'll take occasional pictures with the iPhone. And I figured what I'll do is I'll make, if there's enough in there to make a book out of it, I'll make a cute little, like a teeny book, like the smallest size book that they can have. like postcard size, you know, that kind of thing. And I ended up taking a number of pictures. The iPhone camera, as you know, is horrible. And of course, the weather wasn't great. So I had to heavily, you know, touch up all of the pictures. But I was surprised I couldn't find a service that could make a really, really small book. So I think the one I made is something like 5x7. But it's soft cover. It's very small. You know, the whole thing costs less than $10 to make.
iPhoto used to have little books, like little flip books.
Yeah, it's like that, but it's not as small as I would have hoped. I almost wanted to make one that was like, you know, 3x4 inches, maybe, yeah. Something like teeny and cute.
They used to do that on iPhoto. Yeah. I don't know if they've stopped.
Well, I didn't look at iPhoto. I'm trying to do this on the PC.
Windows Weekly. I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry.
Sometimes I forget.
This iPhoto thing, I'm not even sure what you're talking about. The point is...
What is this iPhoto?
Over here in the real world, I would know.
No, they do. They have a 3.5x2.625. They have exactly what you
want. See, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
I should buy a Mac.
No. Please. No. Anyway, I get enough hate mail. They blame me. They think I'm doing it.
Yeah, and I'll never tell them any differently. But the point is, maybe it's not obvious. I think every time we've talked about anything Apple related, it's actually come.
I try to shut
for me,
up.
Not for me. Yeah. I can't stop talking about Apple. I'm infatuated.
Don't say that now, because now you're going to get the hate mail.
Anyway, the point is,
yes.
Even with the low quality iPhone photos, you know, you print them small enough, and you know, this book is really cool. It's a neat little book, and it's funny because those are the two newest books of this gargantua, you know, humongo book, which looks like it was, you know, made for the Library of Congress. And then next to it is this little book of postcards, and they're cute. I mean, it's kind of an interesting contrast, but. I'd have to say on the PC side, I happen to prefer my publisher, and mostly that has to do with just the sheer number of templates that are available and themes. But if you're going for like length and size and so forth, a Blurb is kind of amazing for that stuff.
Good. Blurb. So, yeah, I've seen Blurb at trade shows, and they're full bleed, right? They go all the way to the edge. And
oh, yeah. You know, they all
do that now? Okay.
Yeah, the Blurb book that my friend made from D.C. is it's like museum quality. It's beautiful.
Wow. Well, I'm looking at my publisher. They have leather covers, and they go as big as 15 inches by 11.5. And I mean, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, oh, it's good stuff. So I'll write this up, you know, next month or so. There's a couple more I need to do, and I want to try some other services to be sure, but. I would say as of now on the PC side, my publisher. And by the way, you know, this is the one that's the most equivalent to what Apple does as well.
Right.
And I think it's pretty clear.
I think Apple uses
I believe that when Apple started it, they even said they were using my publisher.
Yeah. I mean, they outsource it, I'm sure. I don't know who they use anymore, but I think that they flip around. It's a nice thing to do, though. I mean, it's a really great way to, and I kick myself for not getting this done in time for Valentine's Day, because that was my plan. Oh, well.
Oh, well, it's no wonder she wanted you out of the house.
That's probably it. I think I'll go back with flowers and candy.
There you go. Yeah. She's not like a psychiatrist type, so she won't be able to read into that. Or
oh, yeah. Everything I do. Everything I do. If I accidentally bump into her, she said, you meant that. And it's like, okay.
Oh, that might just be, she's a woman. She might just know that intuitively.
Oh, all women are basically psychotherapists. They all see right through us. You wanted to talk. You've been reading a book called The Dumbing of America. What is that?
it's not actually called The Dumbing of America, but that's what it's about.
Okay.
No, I was reading the New York Times this morning, and I was amused to see that they had reviewed a book called The Age of American Unreason, and it's basically about the dumbing of America. And the reason I found this interesting is because I don't believe I ever published this. I might have after the fact, but probably about a year ago, I sat down and wrote what I was intended to be a blog post called "America."
I like it.
You know, yeah, and it was just about how we as a country have stopped looking to experts for the answers and are instead looking to people that we just kind of like. Mm. You know, maybe they have quirky personalities, or
you'd like to have a beer with them.
Yes. Yes. In the most famous example, or maybe they're just, you know, they look good on TV or something. And, mm-hmm. I find this to be disturbing. And, I don't know. I think the internet plays a little bit into it. I think it's wonderful that we can all publish our thoughts online and attack each other, you know, as we will. I think it's not just the internet.
I think TV has a lot to do with it. I mean, look what's on TV. It's absolutely moronic.
Well, right. So, and without picking on too many people specifically, I will pick on a few. I would point to, if you look at, you know, people we would look to 20 years ago or 30 years ago for, say, like cooking advice, you know, people like Julia Childs. People who were, in fact, experts, you know.
Right.
Julia Childs wasn't always an expert. In fact, there's an excellent book that her autobiography.
Oh, that's supposed to be really good.
It's fantastic. You know, but she was taught how to cook in France and, you know, took this information to the United States, started this TV show and became a world famous personality. She was an expert, you know.
Right.
The people who are on TV now. Doing the same kind of thing, a lot of them anyway, people like Rachel Ray or Paula Deen or whatever, you know, these people aren't experts. They're just personalities. You know, we like them because they're funny and they're cute and they're perky. And, you know, I one of the most irritating as a traveler, Rachel Ray at least used to do a travel show that was something like how to, you know, spend $30 a day or whatever it was. And, you know, she's at some location somewhere in the world. It doesn't matter where. And she whips out some handbook and she says, I went to the bookstore and picked up a handbook on this place I'm at. And it says that we should go.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And I thought to myself, come on. That's why I'm watching the show, because I want to know what you think. Oh, and if you don't know anything about it, why are you the host of the show?
Right. Because she's perky. You know,
because she's perky. Yeah. So I don't know.
That's why I take great pride in my unperkiness.
I figure, as do I.
Yeah, you turn in a TV show. You turn in a TV show with me on it. You go, well, he must know what he's talking about, because I can't think of any other reason why.
Actually, I'd have to say for a guy, you are kind of perky, but you also know what you're talking about.
So. You called me perky.
Wow. Well, you have a good personality, I guess. I mean,
no, it's true.
I'm like the agent of death. I mean, I would put people to sleep, but
they know you knew your stuff.
But well, I don't know. I don't even want to claim that. I unfortunately, I guess for myself, if I'm going to put myself under the light, I guess what I would say quickly to that would just be, sadly, because of the way things have gone in the computer industry, it's no longer possible to become an expert in any one thing. You talked about, that's, you know, true. I wish I could be a developer.
Yeah.
You know, if I could focus with like a laser light focus on one thing, how awesome would it be to become an absolute expert in any topic, something like C Sharp, or just understand in and out how an application like Microsoft Word works, or
yes,
to be that Excel expert or whatever it
yes
is. Unfortunately, I too am in many ways part of the problem, because I have to be a jack of all trades. There's just so much going on.
You have to be a jack of all trade.
Yeah, it's the nature, I think, of our business, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yep.
You know. So I don't know. You know, maybe I am.
Being I like it. I think you should publish that blog post, America.
I wonder if I did. I'm gonna have to go back to America. Yeah. So.
You know, we talked about this on Twit. There is a movie, not a very good movie, but that was the premise of it, called Idiocracy.
Yes. I have not seen that, but I've heard of it. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And that was the whole premise.
Every time I see something like that, and that was one of them, I look at my, because my wife and I didn't collaborate with her per se, but I threw it by her and asked her what she thought about it, and she gave me a couple of ideas. But I pointed to that, and I said, look, someone's making a Merida. And that one wasn't quite full blown what I was looking at, but this Age of American Unreason appears to be exactly what I, this is the type of thing, like I said, this one, you know, book written by an expert, written by someone who knows what she's talking about, written by someone who knows full well that she is going to be held up as a complainer and just the latest in a long list of people on the way out who are complaining about the new generation, like we always do, and that what's going on in America is in fact no different than what's happened in every generation. But I honestly feel that this is a problem. You know, she has some great examples in this book about, you know, the talk show host who didn't know that Europe wasn't a country, you know, that kind of stuff is scary, you know.
Well, I have to say, I mean, they've always been dumb people, and maybe we celebrate them more on TV than we ought to. I think, though, that we live in a technological age where we are living in an age where the fruits of scientific thought are everywhere around us. And yet, in many ways, we're anti-scientific.
Yeah. Yes, we are anti-science. We're anti-stem cell. We're anti-space program. We're pro, you know, we're anti-evolution. You know, these things are just, they're scary, you know. And
if you love technology, yeah, you should love science, because this is science applied.
And by the way, not to get off on a huge and weird debate, but I would just point out that, you know, there are fringe people on either side of this equation. And I think if you're too extreme in either way, I think that there's a middle ground where you have to have a certain faith, whatever that may be, in things, a faith that, you know, your family will be okay, you know, that things will work out for the best and that kind of stuff. But you also have to have a grounding in just facts, you know, and understanding of the world around you. But I travel a lot. We were talking about this, but I travel a lot with my kids because I want them to see the world. This is something an opportunity I did not have.
Yeah. I agree.
As a child.
I do the same thing. That's exactly why we travel with the kids, to broaden them. That's why people used to travel. It used to be a broadening experience. That was the whole point of it.
Yeah.
Oh, now you've depressed me, Paul. We do have a song.
I know this is so off topic. I just it's something
Off topic, because on this network, this is a network of shows that appeals to people who are intelligent. If you listen to these shows, you are among the smartest people out there. I mean, we're talking about hard stuff. Most people would go, huh? And tune out. We're also talking to technologists, people who love technology. And that to me is the thing that hits home the most. I mean, we live in what appears to be a pretty superstitious age, and I would hope that people.
And how random is that? In the age of technology,
yeah,
you know, people are superstitious. They, you know, I don't know.
I hope that people would start to think a little bit about, hey, if you love your iPod, think about how it got here.
It's not just America, and I should say I happen to live in America, so I know America. But you know, a friend forwarded me a headline today. They're going to kill a woman in Saudi Arabia because she's a witch.
Oh, great! Hard to believe.
I mean, seriously,
in this day and age, you know,
good stuff.
But that's, in a way, I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, is the age of reason versus the age of superstition. And this should be the highlight of the age of reason, in my opinion. The peak. But anyway, we're going to take a break, come back and talk about your software pick of the week, because you've got one. Okay. And your tip, do you have a tip for us?
I do. Back off, please.
I'll tell you what. Because I don't know what's happening to me. Because you mentioned Julia Child and My Life in France, which is her amazing biography, I just checked and it is on Audible.
There you go.
Unabridged. They have actually both. Unabridged is 11 hours, but if you don't have as much time, this is one of the nice things, to have the choice. You can listen to the shorter version of the book and kind of get the flavor of it. 5 hours, about half as long. My Life in France talks about the years that Julia Child spent, as you said, in France, learning to cooking, where she fell in love with French food, and she says, found her true calling. If you love food, if you love Julia, if you love just great memoirs, this is a wonderful story.
You know, when she went to France, she had to go on a boat.
Yeah, it was 1948.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of neat. This was a different era. Right after the war, she was just some little girl, you know, from Pasadena, from Southern California, didn't speak any French, didn't know anything about the country, and suddenly became a Francophile and really was the person to popularize French cooking in the U.S. Kimberly Farr is the narrator. It is available now for free, if you'd like to, from audible.com. Now, here's what you do. You go to audible.com/windows. And you sign up for an Audible account, you'll get a credit for a book. So you can use it for this or any of the 45,000 titles. If you decide not to stick around, no problem. Your book is yours to keep. I think you're going to want to stick around. Audible is such a great way to get your reading done. You're already listening to podcasts. Put a book on your MP3 player, on your Kindle, on your computer, burn a CD, whatever you want to do. And I'll tell you, those times spent stuck in the car in traffic, and I could tell you from my own personal experience, they just melt away. Sometimes, pretty soon, you want to go. I now drive carpool just so I can listen to my books. It's great. I'm not kidding. I told my wife I'll drive carpool anytime. Audible.com/windows. Sign up today. I think you're going to love it. And we do thank Audible for their support of Windows Weekly. They love this show, and we love Audible. So, and we know you know, one of the reasons they like this show is because you're such an Audible listener. They, you know, it's really kind of cool that we can have advertisers. When they came along, I said, oh my God, that's great. Yes. To have an advertiser for a product you love is such a wonderful thing.
Well, that ties into the Emerita thing. I don't think people read enough. And
what a great way to do it.
Yeah. Well, right. And by the way, in a way that sort of fits into the way people's lives have changed. I mean, I certainly, as someone who works as many hours a week as I work, I understand we can't all just grab a book and run up to the bedroom or out to the chair outside or whatever and hang out and read a book. But if you spend a lot of time in the car commuting or anywhere commuting or travel a lot like I do, and you have downtime, and this is a great way to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. I mean, that is one of the reasons people don't read as much. We don't have as much time. And a lot of it is they like to sit in front of the tube.
Yeah.
But
in front of Rachel Ray. And
well, she's cute.
Learn it. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Julia, let's face it. Julia Child was no
Julia
spring
was
chicken.
Handsome woman.
A handsome woman is the phrase they use.
Yeah, tough to listen to, but God,
she was wonderful, and she loved what she did, and she always took a little glass of wine anytime she poured wine.
I have a friend who is a travel agent, and a friend of his from the travel agency has a recording of her on his answering machine because he used to book travel. And he kept it, you know, because she passed away. And he was describing it to me a couple of months ago. And it's just sweet. You know, she's just a wonderful person.
Oh, wonderful. I remember when Jennifer and I first started going out, and it was probably in 89 or 90. We went up to the wine country where we now live, and went to a cooking weekend at the Fetzer Vineyards, and she was there cooking, and it was what a treat it was to watch her and listen to her. And
yeah. Well, she's awesome too, because she never did the measuring thing, right?
Oh, no, just slurp it in.
You need some of this. You can never have too much butter in it.
She was a caricature. I mean, she was just so much fun. So much fun. So let's talk a little bit about, let's start with your tip, and then we'll get the software pick. How about that?
Okay. This is a simple one, but it's in some ways a continuation of what we talked about last week, which was securing Windows Vista. And this time it's just about Windows Update, which is another piece of that puzzle. You know, when you install Windows Vista, you know, one of the things that pops up at the beginning is whether or not you want to turn on automatic updates.
Right.
And I suppose there's some debate about this, but I have always said yes. I install all updates automatically.
And me too.
You know, I've run into people who feel very strongly about the reverse, and they can point to the one or two times where some install did something fritzy and something went wrong. But I have to say, you know, the reality of the world that we live in is that you should be letting the system update itself. There's a reason they're putting out these things, especially the security updates. You need to get that stuff. And what's interesting in Vista is that they've changed a Windows Update a little bit so that now it's actually an application that hits a back-end service out on the internet rather than being a web page or a website like it used to be.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's if you actually go, if you try to go to the Windows Update website in Vista, it will actually launch the application. It won't let you run it off the web. Right. But there's by doing that, they allow you to do a bunch of different things. And I just typed in Windows and did not get Windows Update. I just want to make sure I have the application in front of me here. And depending on which version of Windows Vista you have, you might see some different stuff. So Windows Vista Ultimate will have those Ultimate extras that appear in there. But there's some stuff that may not be obvious to Windows Update that I also think you should enable. For example, one of the options is whether or not you want to install updates for other products. And these are actually things that come from a back-end service called Microsoft Update. And if you enable that, you'll also get updates for things like Microsoft Office, Windows Live, the Microsoft Zune stuff. And then the goal is eventually over time that they'll open that up to third parties. So if you have something like Norton installed or hopefully even Apple products, you know, all these things that have their own auto-updating mechanisms, that this stuff can all go through Microsoft Update and will update through a central location.
So to do that, so you go to the settings page, and is it
actually, if it's not enabled, you should have a link right at the bottom of the main Windows Update page, it says something to the effect of install updates from other other products from Microsoft. Click here.
Okay. Yeah, because it's enabled on my system. So I must.
So you've already enabled it. So if you want to see where you enable it now, you can go to Change Settings. And then down at the bottom, it says Use Microsoft Update. And that says you will receive updates from Windows and other products from Microsoft Update.
Got it. And it, the first time it is a little bit of an install. You have to run a little.
Well, what it does is it loads a web page and you click a box to say okay.
Right.
And I believe there's a user account control prompt. And once you do that, you're all set. I leave this thing on install updates automatically, which is the recommended setting, every day at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I also have this is something you don't have to do, but I also happen to ensure that recommended updates are installed. So that there's no.
Oh, okay. Not just crucial, but recommended.
Right. Okay. Now, that won't install everything. So every once in a while, it actually makes sense to go and check. And you'll see a Windows Update icon down in your tray occasionally, and it'll say updates are now available for your system. I find it's actually sometimes useful, even at that point, to check for updates, because sometimes it actually finds more that are optional. And you can kind of look over them and decide if you want them or not. Maybe they're non-critical driver updates or whatever. But, you know, one thing that's been interesting to me, too, is since SP1 has come out, I know that this past Tuesday was one of the patch Tuesdays, and I was curious to see if there were any patches in there for SP1, and I don't believe there were, actually. I did have a couple of updates, but they were things like, Windows Defender, antivirus definitions and things like that. None of the major fixes that they announced, so I guess that stuff was all included.
Cool.
So I guess the tip, such as it is just to make sure you're using this. And my recommendation, my personal recommendation, is to leave it on and to have it automatically install this stuff.
There's something I've always wanted to know. If I have it set to do it at 3 a.m., now I shut down my computer at night. What will happen? Will it get done when I turn it on?
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you turn it off, the next time it comes on, it will check.
Okay, good.
If you put it to sleep, it will actually wake up, do what it has to do, and then turn off. And there are some other things that that enable that, including Windows Home Server when it does the backup. I believe those backups, they must happen at midnight, because I was sitting out in my den the other night, and the laptop came to life. And I noticed it because the external mouse was plugged in, and it turned on. And I thought, oh my God, what's this thing? what is this? And then I turned it off, and then I was going to bed, and I noticed there was another laptop in here that had turned on, and it was the same thing. It was just it was backing the machines up, one at a time. So these things would actually come out of sleep, back up, and go back to sleep.
Scary.
Okay, it's Microsoft. What could go wrong?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I'm gonna turn it on. That's really great. I'm now seeing I have 11 important updates.
There you go.
There you go. Is right.
You can do what my wife does. Is just never. She uses a Mac, but the Mac version of this, you don't install anything, and then there's all these blinking things asking you why you haven't updated your system.
update.
And every 2 weeks, I'll walk by her computer and just click on it, and then it gets installed that way. So that method works for some people.
I do that with my kids, because exactly the same. And my wife, too. They just ignore it. They take the dialog box that says there's updates, and they drag it off the left side of the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what she does. She actually puts them over the corner. I guess they were a little too annoying.
I don't know what it wants.
Seriously, you really need to install this. You are at risk.
What? Install what?
I'll just move that out of the way. Look, I'm not at risk anymore. I can't see it.
I don't know what that is. What is it talking about?
That's good stuff, yeah. So, she loves computers.
No, I do exactly the same thing. It's kind of funny. So let's talk about your software pick.
Okay, so the software pick of the week this week is actually an online service, and it ties into what we were talking about earlier with Flickr and Google Picasa, which is actually kind of coincidental, by the way, but... Well, maybe it isn't, because I've been looking at this stuff lately.
No, nothing's... there are no coincidences.
It's all connected. It's the circle of life.
What sign are you again? See,
I'm not telling you.
You're a Pisces. I knew it.
Okay. So it's called... And wow, it's not coming up. Isn't that nice? Because my internet connection has been so lousy lately, and I'm really happy about that.
I'm glad you have an internet connection, because we wouldn't be able to talk if you didn't.
Yeah, I think what Verizon does is they let you do one thing at a time. So if my son was playing a video game right now, we wouldn't be able to talk.
You have Fios?
Yeah. Ever since they updated with the TV, it's been a disaster.
Oh, no.
So, anyway, based on my notes, it's something called Picnic. It's an online photo.
Yes. I love this.
Yeah, and it integrates with both Flickr and Picasa and probably some other services, I guess. There's a free version. There's a paid version. I've been just using the free version, and I got to tell you, this thing is awesome. And the notion of a web-based photo editor, it sounds odd. And you know, the truth is I do a lot of – obviously, I do a lot of editing locally anyway. But I think there are a lot of people who are going to basically put pictures up on Flickr or Picasa, wherever they want to go. And what they want to do is share them with others, however they do it, if it's public or private or whatever. And you can actually just step through them one at a time with this web app, and you can, you know – edit the levels, edit the colors, edit the tone, you know, crop, resize, whatever. And it works. It works fantastically well. You could edit up in the cloud and then save it back to your desktop if you want.
Now, as I remember, it's if you edit in Flickr, you're going to be using Picnic. Didn't they add that?
Well, I came to it the other way around, so I'm not actually sure how they... I guess if you were in Flickr and you chose edit,
let me
you would
try
automatically
this. Yeah, I think so. Let me try this.
So
I see.
I know
remember
that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so,
I wasn't sure if it was because I had already signed up with Flickr or with Picnic
right
before I noticed that, but I wasn't sure. I'm not sure what the chick.
It's there. Very recently they've added. If you go to your, if you have a Flickr account and you at the top, there's those icons at the top and you hit edit photo,
yep,
it will load Picnic.
It actually loads.
Yeah.
Picnic. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. This
it's very seamless. And so if you come to it from Flickr, it has that Picnic look across the top with the grass and so forth. But the next section down, it's got your little picture from Flickr. It's got a Flickr logo. You know, it's actually somewhat integrated. And I think it's a wonderful tool. It really works. And I spent a silly amount of time. And I do this with all photo editors. You know, you go in and you want to find that one photo editor that does the auto fix that's like perfect, you know. And I always check. And this one, you know, the autofix stuff is actually very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess there's a premium version and so forth. But you don't need to have an account on Picnic. Picnik. It's weird spelling. Picnik.com.
Right.
And it's all in Flash. I mean, it's really quite impressive.
It's really slick. Yeah, yeah. It really is.
I think we're actually entering an amazing age of...
This is... I do too. And this type of application is the... is the showboat one, right? Because this is the thing people are like, well, you're not going to replace Photoshop with a website, you know? Well,
maybe.
I don't know. Maybe you are. I mean,
yeah.
this is pretty good. And it's fast, you know? It works really well.
There is an even more Photoshop-like web-based application called Aviary. And I don't have an account. You might have seen the video on YouTube.
This is the Google... this is linked to from Google, the Google developer site or whatever.
I don't know. It's avia.viary.com. And all their tools are bird names, right? So there's Toucan. The editing is, I mean, the tools are amazing. There's Phoenix is an image editor, Toucan for color swatches and palettes, Peacock for a computer algorithm-based pattern generator, Raven is a vector editor. This is all on the web. A 3D modeler, audio editor, music generator, video editor. They're, I mean, amazing. Now, it's beta only. Yeah, invite only. You've got to, I suppose at some point they're going to, it's done. Oh, I'm sorry. It's done in Air. That's how they do it.
This is the Adobe Air.
Yeah, Air is basically Flash, but it's an even more powerful Flash toolkit. And it's interesting because if I were Adobe, I would see this as the biggest threat to Photoshop ever. And it's based on their own technology, which is kind of impressive. So, yeah, I think we're really entering an amazing era of web applications. They're so
and again,
good.
You got to put it in perspective, too, because there are always going to be power users, professional photographers, whatever, who are going to look at this and say, you know, this doesn't do this, this, and this. And, yeah, fair enough. But this is one of those tools that I think for a huge percentage of the population, it's free. It's online. It works with what you're using, and it works great.
Yep.
And I get it. It's not the be-all. It's not a Photoshop replacement. That's not the point. But it's a neat tool. I mean,
truly,
it's
amazing.
an amazing tool. Yeah.
Picnic. Maybe that is that how you spell it for real?
Picnic. Picnic is usually with a C.
Isn't it Picnic? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is there a K in there? I can't remember. This is the problem with these web things. Nobody's going to know how to spell. Talking about the dumbing of America, everybody's going to start spelling things like the web.
Right.
Leave out vowels.
The toucan, the bird thing is a little, I didn't want to get into that.
A dot V-I-A-R-Y. Yeah, sure. That's how I spell aviary.
Well, no, I'm not worried about the aviary part. I'm more worried about thinking in my head. Now, I need to edit
a
photo.
I need to use toucan. I guess picnic also works with Picasa. So if you have a Picasa web album.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yeah, it works with a variety of, I think
shots,
it's more
Facebook,
than just those
yeah.
two. Yeah.
Wow,
Facebook,
that's impressive. Yep. That's really cool. So you may not even have to go to PICNIK.com, but you can.
Okay, you're saying, so in other words, if you have Flickr and you have not even signed up for Picnic,
yeah.
you can go and click at it and we'll actually go to Picnic.
Yeah, it uses their tools, yeah.
Okay, I was curious about that. So either way, that's neat. I also, on a side note, last year sometime, I mentioned a software pick of the week called PickMe from Ray's Labs. And Greg Reyes just wrote me an email and said that they have updated that software so that it works with Picasa Web as well. So they had supported Flickr and Facebook originally. Now they support Picasa Web. So if you're on the Google stuff, PickMe is it's a local application, something you download. It's got this beautiful, you know, crazy looking 3D interface and everything. It's really neat. But another nice photo editor and a way to share photos with others.
I use the Google all the time.
You use the Google?
Yeah, I love the Google.
Okay. Well, thank you for making that sound so dirty.
Well, you just call me Perky Leo Laporte. This is it.
I didn't mean that as an insult.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're in trouble now. All right, we'll talk again next week about Windows and all things Windows and maybe a few other side lines, but that's part of the fun of it. You can read more of Paul's stuff, including, I hope, at some point, Emerita.
I wonder now if I ever posted it. I might have, you know, after the fact posted it. I don't recall.
You chickened out. I bet you were afraid.
I think I did too. I was, I get enough, you know, bad email from people. Yeah. So
hate mail goes to Paul at his site, which is the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. The super site blog's there.
Apple lover at thrive.com.
Apple lover. You Apple lover. And of course, he's also news editor for Windows IT Pro and we're the author of the book, Windows Vista Secrets, from Wiley & Sons. Paul, great to talk to you. Have a great time in London.
Thank you, sir.
I'm so jealous, but we'll see you in a week. You'll be back in time.
When we come back and you can talk over me snoring, it'll be fun.
And he'll be talking like this, Governor. Have fun, Governor. All right, take care, Paul.
I already know my kid's going to say, you said they spoke English.
This is the real English. The English before it was a Meridud.
There you go. Okay. Well, I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Paul. See you. Take care.
Thanks, you too.